1-800-636-8686. All right, as promised, we're joined right now by a senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. He is Therese Paylor. My man, Therese. How'd that long weekend go for you, dude? How you doing?
Oh, Jim, I'm doing great, man. Thank you for asking. Always having a good Thanksgiving, man. A lot to be grateful for this year.
Yeah. So let me first ask you, the Tennessee Titans going to Baltimore, they gather on the Ravens logo, then they come back from double digits down the second half. They beat Baltimore. Yesterday, they gather on the Colts logo in Indianapolis, then they beat the crap out of the Colts. What does that tell you about the attitude of this Titans team?
Well, as somebody who loves the game of football, Jim, I can tell you, I love the edge that the Titans have, okay? Because we have to look at where they are right now in the AFC. And that's on a tier below the Chiefs and the Steelers. They're, like, right there in that second tier with, the Bills. But so what does that mean? When they get to the playoffs, if they want to get to the Super Bowl, they'll probably have a home game in the first round. But if they want to get to the Super Bowl, they're going to have to go into Kansas City. At some point, they're going to have to go into Pittsburgh, probably both those places, and win. And what do you need to do that? Well, you got to be talented, and you better have an identity, a tough guy identity, because you don't win against a good Steelers team in January without having that. And you don't beat the most special quarterback in the NFL, a team with the "we're the effing champ" swagger like the Chiefs, without having that mentality. So the point of the column I wrote about this was that, hey, you know, the Titans are showing the edge that you better have if you want to break into that top tier in the AFC. So I like what I see from them. I think they're getting better on defense. And I love the fact they know who they are, and they are extremely well coached. And that'll take you far in this league.
Therese Paylor is joining us. All right, so you got Kansas City, right? They jump out to a 17-0 lead. They were driving to go up 24-0. They still look like the team to beat, the defending champs. Like, how do you go about stopping this Kansas City offense?
You pray. But I mean, there are different strategies, right? And I think the one that's been most successful this year, because I live in Kansas City, I obviously watch this team a lot. You know, the thing that's successful is that you better have four guys that can rush the passer on their own. Blitzing the Kansas City Chiefs does not work. Blitzing the Kansas City Chiefs means you have fewer guys in coverage, and because Mahomes can make five guys miss pretty easily, and he sees everybody, he's got amazing vision, you're going to get burned. So teams that have decided, you know, no, this is what we do. We blitz. They're the teams that get the ball thrown over their heads with regularity because you can't stop Tyreek Hill, right? So the few teams that have had success against the Chiefs, what they typically do is they rush three or they rush four, and those four can get home on their own. And then coverage-wise, they play a lot of coverage behind it. They'll play zone, and they'll keep everything in front of them. So basically, they choose death by a thousand paper cuts until they get in the red zone, and they get a little bit more creative. Or even on third down, maybe you can, you know, just every once in a while, tweak it up a little bit. But you better be able to play coverage on the back end against Kansas City. And you don't want to give them the downfield shot to let them go on their Golden State Warriors-like run.
Therese Paylor joining us. All right, yeah, that's what you expect from Kansas City, right? They're multidimensional, they're creative, they're explosive, they can get you with the paper cuts, they can beat you so many different ways. But what about Tampa Bay? I mean, forget the moral victory, forget that they were coming back. What is with that offense right now? You've got the alleged GOAT, you've got all these weapons. Why is that offense not better than it is?
Okay, great question. It's one I've been pondering myself. Now, again, I watch these guys a lot, too, because it's an interesting team, Jim. But I got to tell you, I'm not seeing the offense operate the way I thought it would. So before the season, I talked to Bruce Arians. I'm like, okay, you know, here there's a bit of a contrast here because the way Tom Brady has played the last 5 years with the dump-offs, with the run game, with the play action, and the occasional downfield shots is not really what Bruce Arians does. It's a very vertical-based, no risk it, no biscuit offense. That's not what Tom has done. So I asked him about that, and he said, well, it's not that hard. The quarterback has the ball in his hand. But when I watch this team play football, I'm seeing a team that's very vertical-based still, and it's not really that reminiscent of the Tom Brady offense that he's functioned in the previous 5 or 6 years in New England. He won 3 Super Bowls with that offense that I just described to you. A part of an issue is that the running backs are not nearly as good catching the ball as what he had at his disposal in New England, whether it was a Deion Lewis or James White type. Like, he doesn't really have that, even though those guys that he has right now are functional. What they can do, Jim, and what they need to do more of is run the football. I know there's a push to say, hey, passing the football is the most efficient thing you can do. That's correct, but your quarterback's 43, right? So you got to run the ball and establish that. And I'm not seeing that hurt the Titans. Like, you got to line up and you got to establish your will with the run game, make it easy on Tom, then go play action off that, and then take your design shot. Yes, you've got a lot of weapons in the pass game. You do, and you got to take advantage of them. But they also have two pretty good weapons in the backfield, in Fournette and Ronald Jones. And I think that this is a team that needs to lean on the run game more, become a little bit more balanced, and I think that'll make the passing game more dangerous. So that's just my opinion, but I think that's the issue. I'm not seeing the meld of the New England style of offense, which was very much custom fit to Tom Brady, as I thought there would be in Tampa.
We are talking to Terrez Paylor, and we will do so for a few more moments. I'm picking my spots carefully. I got to ask you this, though. Like, 2020 is 2020, and you never know what you're going to get week to week in the NFL. And then I would take that a step further and say you're not exactly sure what you're going to get week to week from the Raiders. But, Terrez, how do you explain the Falcons smashing the Raiders the way they did and doing it without Julio Jones and Todd Gurley?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that on our podcast last night. Like, you know, I was ready to give the Raiders a lot of credit last week. Like, they played with Kansas City. They almost won the football game. I'm like, you know what? Derek Carr has taken a step up. Like, he's really kind of changed his stars a little bit, which is something that's incredibly difficult to do. But if you're going to do that and you're going to give somebody that type of credit, they can't get smashed on the road by a team that struggled like Atlanta. There's no excuse for it, right? You know, the Falcons are playing good football under Raheem Morris, and we have to give that credit. But the thing I was most concerned with was their inability to pass block. I thought they had some issues up front. You know, the Falcons front, that hasn't been that good, and that's a concern for me going forward about the Raiders. You know, if they want to take that next step and make the playoffs, they got to be more consistent, because good teams don't go down to Atlanta and lose by 30-something points.
All right, so you mentioned you live in Kansas City, but you have ties to the Detroit area. In fact, you went to the University of Detroit Jesuit High School. So what was your reaction to the news that the Lions fired head coach Matt Patricia and their GM, Bob Quinn?
Overdue. You know, I think there was an issue there, obviously, with the players. You've been seeing people dunk on Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, you know, since that firing. Players, you know, and there's never like a great sign. You always get some of that, but let's just say there's a lot of it, Jim, a little bit too much. And yeah, I think now you have, I think it's a signal and a reminder that you have to treat players with respect, you know, and if you're going to be tough on them, you know, you better make sure that it's A, authentic, and that B, you know, you can, and you know, and that they'll listen. You better win. You know, there's no doubt about that. You better find a way to win to make that okay. Because players don't want to be coached that way. And I think it's also a reminder that when you inherit a team that has been competitive and largely winning, I mean, they were winning under Jim Caldwell, you know, you better not just tear it down to the studs for no reason. Like, they hired Matt Patricia to take the next step. They never did. They just took multiple steps backward in the names of building the culture when none of that was needed. And that built resentment. And now you've got a losing franchise with a slow defense and a quarterback who probably needs to go elsewhere to actually fulfill his potential. It's going to go down as a shame that Matthew Stafford has been a player for this organization, because he's a very talented guy. And, you know, even like 6 years ago, I was thinking, man, what could this guy's career have been like had he been able to play for somebody like Andy Reid? It really kind of stinks. He's a really, really talented guy. And you could put him on the subcategory of the Calvin Johnson, Barry Sanders level of players wasted by playing for that organization. But the hope is, Jim, one thing ownership does do, they get out the way. So hopefully they hire the right coach and general manager, they will get out of the way. And that's a team that can win for a long time, because they don't meddle. They've just failed to hire the right people.
Right, I was going to say, right, if they hire the right coach and the right GM. Terrez, one last thought. I want to ask you about one more person before I let you go. Friday was the 13th anniversary of the murder of Sean Taylor. You had written a piece about him and his legacy back in 2018, and his name still comes up time and time again. When I'm talking to players today, and I'm not sure there's another player who is held with that level of respect and admiration. Guys absolutely loved him. When you think about him, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Well, you know, when I was in college, he was playing for Miami, and you know, he was just a fun guy to watch, and somebody that we were robbed of seeing well into his career. just he was a freak. You know, Lawrence, I think Lewis Riddick said it right. He was like Lawrence Taylor at safety. He was an aggressive, nasty guy with amazing ball skills and speed for his size, but he was incredibly physical. He was a physical freak for the position, someone that would have redefined the position, and somebody that I think the reverential tone that current players still talk about this guy says a lot. Like the reverential tones that Landon Collins and just take your pick. All these safeties are like Sean Taylor was a beast, and they respect him to this day. And it saddens me because as someone who loves the game of football, he's the kind of player, kind of the rare player that brought eyes to the game because of how dominant he was. And it's never a good thing, not just for his family, but for the game and honestly for people who love football, that we didn't get to see that guy in his prime because it would have been special.
He is a senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He is a Hall of Fame voter as well. He is co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast, breaking it down for us on this Monday. Therese, great job, man. Appreciate you as always. Always good to have you on this show. Thanks so much.
No, thanks for having me. Anytime, Jim.
My man. Therese Paylor. Sean Taylor is something like, even to this day, contemporary players hold him with such reverence and admiration and respect. And there was nobody like him. He was a very, very different dude.